Chapter 13, Fire Pool or Waterloo, Accountability Now and in Kandla. There is no shame in strategic retreat if it lets you remain strong enough to go after the enemy later. So said Jane Lindskold. When the late Mandy Rousseau, then a journalist with the Mail and Guardian, broke the Nkandla story in 2009, she started a saga that was still incomplete by mid-2016 when this book went to press. Initially, the story seemed one of the mismanagement of public funds, but over time, it morphed into the EFF's war cry of "pay back the money," a demand addressed vociferously and repeatedly at President Jacob Zuma. Nkandla is the country seat of the Zuma clan in northern KwaZulu-Natal and has been for many years, going back to the Anglo-Zulu Wars of the 19th century. The land is owned by a trust controlled by the Zulu king. Before Zuma rose to power, it consisted of an unprepossessing cluster of rondavels. The law allows for security enhancements to the property of presidents at the expense of the taxpayer. This chance was seized, and a massive program of works turned the homestead into a badly built palace, with many new features that had nothing to do with the security of the president in residence, and much more to do with the abuse of office, maladministration, and scope creep in the course of the project, which was managed by the Department of Public Works. Among other things, the work was placed under the supervision of Zuma's private architect, who was subsequently sued for 155 million rand, and at the time of writing was defending the civil case brought against him by the Special Investigating Unit, an entity that needs an instruction from the president to investigate any situation. Once the media began to feed on the story of excesses at Nkandla, it did not take long for a range of complaints to land on the desk of the public protector, Advocate Thuli Madonsela. This prompted an investigation and led to the publication, in March 2014, of her celebrated report entitled Secure in Comfort. The report was then second-guessed by Parliament and the Minister of Police. In a comical interlude, the latter sought to protect his leader by characterizing the swimming pool built during the renovations as a fire pool, thus magically converting it into a security enhancement. The governing alliance in Parliament took the position that the remedial action required by the public protector was no more than a recommendation and had no binding effect. How this could be argued with a straight face when the Constitution itself says that, and I quote, "the public protector has the power to take appropriate remedial action," is one of the abiding mysteries of the entire saga. The president's legal representatives eventually abandoned this defense when the matter was finally argued in the Constitutional Court. In December 2013, some months before the public protector released her report, a leaked copy was given copious coverage in the Mail and Guardian. This attracted the attention of Accountability Now. On any proper analysis of the leaked report, things had run off the rails at Nkandla on a massive scale. The question was what to do about it. We decided that a criminal complaint would be the best way forward. This invokes the machinery of state and puts the Criminal Justice Administration into the loop. It can have a back-straightening effect on minor players in the malfeasance in question, leading to confessions, plea bargains, and deals for immunity from prosecution in exchange for a clean breast and useful information for catching the big fish. Of course, with very big fish, this does not necessarily happen rapidly, but it can happen given time. And so it came to pass that at the crack of dawn, on the day after the death of Nelson Mandela, I found myself in the charge office at the Cape Town Central Police Station with a letter of complaint in my hand. Constable Ndebele was on duty and was bored and tired at the end of his shift. Not much happened in the charge office at that hour. He asked how he could help me, and when I indicated that I wanted to lay some charges, he ushered me toward a cubicle. He then produced the standard form for laying a complaint and proceeded to fill it in. When we got to the part of the form where the offences had to be listed, I produced the letter of complaint and suggested that he simply say, "See attached letter to the Western Cape Commissioner of Police." He scanned the letter and stiffened when he came to the name of the person against whom the complaint was being laid, Jacob G. Zuma. "I think I should ask one of my superiors to help you," he said. "I don't think that's necessary," I replied. "This is just a formality to put the ball into play." "No, I insist," he responded, and scuttled off to the back office before I could argue the point further. He was gone for a couple of minutes and reappeared looking crestfallen. Obviously reluctant to risk jeopardizing their careers by accepting the complaint, his superiors had told him to get on with the job at hand. The forms were duly filled in, and I took the required oath, and then left for the early service at St. George's Cathedral, where the organist, Barry Smith, emerged from retirement to play a magnificent rendition of the national anthem. This virtuoso performance was given to mark the passing of Madiba for a far larger congregation than usual, due to the news of Madiba's death and the presence of the arch at the service. As a result, the Anglican Church was probably the first institution in South Africa, if not the world, to solemnly mark the passing of the great man. A few months later, I received a call from Constable Ndebele. It emerged that he was facing disciplinary proceedings because he had accepted my complaint on behalf of Accountability Now. A quick interaction with police management put a stop to this misstep. Following the release of the Public Protector's final report on Nkandla in March 2014, the complaint was amplified by others filed by the DA and the EFF. Strangely, the matter was not referred to the Hawks, which, given the nature of the charges, would have been the appropriate police unit to conduct the investigation. Instead, it was retained by detective services in Pretoria on the express instructions of the National Commissioner of Police, Ria Piecha. This rankled with Hawks managers, but given the command structure of the police, there was little they could do to get their hands on the docket. The situation changed when, in November 2014, the Constitutional Court gave its judgment in the third Glenister case. Emboldened by the additional powers afforded him under the new court-crafted dispensation, the head of the Hawks, General Anwar Dramat, reportedly called for the dockets about Nkandla to be transferred to his unit. This did not happen. Instead, the Minister of Police suspended Dramat on the 23rd of December 2014 on the grounds of kidnapping allegations dating back several years, which had, until then, been entirely ignored. To make matters worse, in terms of the amended legislation, the Minister no longer had the power to suspend Dramat. This could only be done with the permission of Parliament. However, no such permission was sought or obtained. When it became apparent in the course of civil litigation launched by the Helen Suzman Foundation, assailing the suspension, that the minister had erred, further pressure was brought to bear on the hapless Dramat. He succumbed by resigning and accepting a rather generous package. In March 2016, he was charged with the kidnapping. At the time of writing, the criminal case was still pending. Needless to say, nothing had come of the criminal charges laid by the three institutions mentioned earlier in respect of Nkandla, all of which based their complaints on the report of the Public Protector. In place of an independent and effective criminal investigation into the excesses of Nkandla, which was clearly not on the cards, the opposition parties in Parliament turned to the civil courts to review the strange gyrations of the Cabinet and the ANC majority in Parliament, all aimed at whitewashing the malfeasance apparent from the report of the Public Protector.
First, the DA launched review proceedings in the High Court with the overarching aim of establishing the extent of the powers of the public protector. This went hand in hand with its court action in respect of the chief operating officer at the SABC, Claudio Motsoeneng. This worthy had simply treated adverse findings by the public protector about his conduct at the SABC as a recommendation, which he was at liberty to ignore. In February 2014, in a report entitled When Governance and Ethics Fail, the public protector found that Motsoeneng, then still acting COO, had been dishonest and had been allowed to operate above the law. It recommended that the SABC board take corrective action against him for lying about his matric certificate, raising his salary from 1.5 million rand to 2.4 million rand, and irregularly increasing the salaries of other staff members. Despite the report, Motsoeneng was permanently appointed to his position in July 2014.
In 2015, the DA launched a court application to try to force the SABC to implement Madonsela's report and to set aside Motsoeneng's appointment. The court ruled that Madonsela's report was legally binding and ordered the SABC to stage a disciplinary hearing. The hearing was held in December, but cleared Motsoeneng of any wrongdoing. At the time of writing, he was still visibly in place, but fighting a rearguard action in the form of appeals against findings by Judge Dennis Davis of the Western Cape High Court that his full appointment was irrational and that neither he nor the SABC would be given leave to appeal. But back to Nkandla. The EFF then took the bull by the horns and made a direct approach to the Constitutional Court, alleging that it would be in the interests of justice to reach a swift conclusion in respect of the various issues that its demand to pay back the money had raised. When the Constitutional Court indicated that it was prepared to give the EFF a hearing on the matter, the DA swiftly changed its focus and also approached the Constitutional Court. The public protector herself joined in the proceeding to protect her turf and her entitlement to take appropriate remedial action. The stage was set for a mighty confrontation. To the surprise of many long-standing observers of the scorched earth strategy usually adopted by those advising President Zuma, the confrontation did not materialize. In the weeks prior to the hearing, Zuma's team put out feelers about settling the matter and even made an open tender to dispose of it without a fight. The tender was not accepted and argument was heard. Zuma then threw in the towel, mirroring his eventual response to the arms deals litigation. All that remained was for the court to spell out the law and what needed to be done to pay back the money. The judgment was not long in coming. The Chief Justice himself delivered it in full, live on television, on the 31st of March. When he read Order 5 of the judgment, he placed particular emphasis on the word only in the sentence reading, 5. The National Treasury must determine the reasonable costs of those measures implemented by the Department of Public Works at the President's Nkandla homestead that do not relate to security, namely the visitor's centre, the amphitheatre, the cattle kraal, the chicken run, and the swimming pool only. 6. The National Treasury must determine a reasonable percentage of the costs of those measures which ought to be paid personally by the President. The emphasis on the word only set the alarm bells ringing at Accountability Now. This is because the report of the public protector made it crystal clear that all non-security enhancements to Nkandla, paid for by the taxpayer via the Department of Public Works, were for the President's account, and only truly security-related enhancements for that of the taxpayer. Specifically, the report said the President should, and I quote, take steps with the assistance of the National Treasury and the police to determine the reasonable cost of the measures implemented by the Department of Public Works at his private residence that do not relate to security, and which include the visitor's centre, the amphitheatre, the cattle kraal, and chicken run, the swimming pool, and pay a reasonable percentage of the cost of the measures as determined with the assistance of the National Treasury, also considering the Department of Public Works apportionment document. As fate would have it, Accountability Now met Advocate Madonsela and her Cape Town office chief, Advocate Sune Grissel, on the 1st of April 2014, the day after the judgment. Although Inkandla was not on the agenda, there was much to celebrate in respect of the court's findings, especially as regards the binding and enforceable nature of the appropriate remedial action the public protector may require after investigating a complaint. It would no longer be possible to push her reports aside. Anyone who was aggrieved by prescribed remedial action would have to take this on judicial review. If this was not feasible, the unhappy respondent would be left with no alternative but to take the remedial steps required. In the case of Inkandla, this would involve complying with the passage in the Secure in Comfort report quoted above. However, the Inkandla matter did not follow a course which anyone could properly describe as usual. The highest court in the land had been asked to apply itself to the matter and to give its guidance. While the focus of attention was always on the extent of the powers of the public protector, the court did express itself on the quantum of the payment to be made in Orders 5 and 6. This had the effect of considerably reducing the sum of money to be paid back and of diluting the nature of the remedial action required by the public protector. We raised this concern during our meeting with Advocate Madonsela. Guy Lord Roberts, Director of Accountability Now, and the late Professor Tim Dunn, then our Chair of Trustees, expressed concern that the effectiveness of her office would be undermined if the error in the judgment was not addressed. Advocate Madonsela expressed her sympathy for our position and invited us to lodge a complaint. Later that same day, the President took to national television to apologise to the nation, and the ANC Secretary General, Gwedi Montashe, held a media conference during which he issued a significant invitation to the South African public. Accountability Now decided to accept the invitation and wrote to Comrade Secretary General. Some extracts follow. 4th of April 2016. Dear Secretary General, our response to your press conference of 1st April 2016. 1. During your press conference on the evening of the 1st of April 2016, you appealed to the public to engage with the ANC regarding the implications of the Constitutional Court judgment concerning the non-security enhancements to the President's private home at Inkandla, and more generally, as we understood you, regarding the trajectory of our hard-won constitutional democracy under the rule of law, in which openness, accountability, and responsiveness are all foundational values in the order of the day. We welcome your invitation and have decided to act on it. 2. You may recall that we have engaged with you previously regarding the suitability of the President for the high office he holds. 3. In June last year, we wrote to you again to suggest the recall of the President by the ANC due to his involvement in the corrupt settlement package accepted by Xolisi Ntlasana in exchange for his resignation as National Director of Public Prosecutions, and also because the President illegally, and in a manner that amounts to defeating the ends of justice, gave an undertaking to the President of Sudan that he would not be arrested in South Africa. President Robert Mugabe, then head of the AU, made our President's undertaking public before both the full bench of the High Court in Pretoria and the Supreme Court of Appeal confirmed the illegality of not arresting Al-Bashir. Should the matter actually reach a hearing in the Constitutional Court, it is likely to rule the same way, thereby bringing the fitness for office of the President into question once more. 4. As regards the Inclusana debacle, we have laid criminal charges against the President and the Minister of Justice. The docket is under investigation by the Hawks. There are also civil proceedings pending in relation to the matter, which, if successful, will throw further light on the illegality involved in paying out Inclusana the undiscounted balance of his 10-year term of office in order to get rid of him, allegedly because of his willingness to prosecute corruption in high places. The outcome of the civil proceedings will inform the further conduct of the criminal case. 5. In your capacity as Secretary General of the ANC, you are doubtless aware and advised that the Al-Bashir case is unlikely to end well for the President. The Commission of Inquiry into the fitness for office of his appointee Ria Piecha, our current National Commissioner of Police, is unlikely to give her a clean bill of health. The review of the withdrawal of 783 corruption charges against the President himself, whether or not it is won in the courts, reflects poorly on the choice of leader of the ANC, especially as his former financial advisor, Shabir Sheikh, was sentenced to 15 years imprisonment for corrupting the President. The prospects of the applicant's success in litigation challenging the removal from office of Nkosana are good, which will lead to his reinstatement as National Director of Public Prosecution. The legal challenge to the cabinet-endorsed choice of burning Nkomeza as head of the Hawks has merit. The underlying reasons for the friction between the Minister of Finance and the Hawks will, if made public in greater detail, plunge the President into yet another crisis involving his integrity, probity, and fitness for office. The name of the Zuma family is implicated in the Panama Papers corruption data leak from the legal firm Mossack Fonseca in Panama. Lending credence to the denied claims by Julius Malema that the President recently took a vast amount of cash to Dubai for the Gupta family. The ongoing harassment of the public protector by the Hawks is both counterproductive and ill-considered. The decision of the ANC majority in the National Assembly to decline a well-reasoned request of the public protector for additional funding is lamentable and ought to be reversed forthwith so as to ensure the dignity and effectiveness of that office, as is constitutionally required. None of the foregoing factors does anything positive to grow the national economy, and all of them hasten the looming financial downgrades of South Africa to junk status. Due to the negative implications of junk status for the economy, the ability of the state to respect, protect, promote, and fulfill rights in the Bill of Rights, particularly the expensive pro-poor socio-economic rights, is placed in jeopardy. Nene Gate and the irregular nuclear build program, as well as allegations of state capture and the inability of the President to make sound appointments due to his compromised and conflicted status, contribute to the negative outlook for the economy. The effect on the political popularity of the ANC, in a climate in which social security services are cut back, the public administration is shrunk, and the housing, healthcare, and education are not delivered on the scale to which the public have become accustomed, will be negative. 6. We are obviously not privy to the confidential deliberations of the National Executive Committee of the ANC, on which you serve. We would hope that the facts and factors listed above all given due weight in its deliberations, and that it has due regard to the confidential market research on voting trends which the ANC conducts. 7. We respectfully submit that there is much to commend the immediate recall of the President
and we ask that the views of branches be democratically canvassed so that the NEC, as the highest decision-making body of the ANC between conferences, can be put in a position to give well-informed reconsideration to the decision not to recall the president at this delicate time in a dangerous year.
8. In our list of bullet points set out above, we have tried to concentrate on the future as much as possible. Like all patriotic South Africans, we are concerned that the international and indeed local perception of the sustainability, viability, and probity of the country as an investment destination is adversely affected by all the facts and factors we have listed for you. As the Minister of Finance has pointed out, it is essential to stimulate economic growth of the kind that creates jobs in large numbers for the currently unemployed youth of the country. This will not happen if the country is downgraded to junk status, and junk status is more probable under the leadership of the president than if he is replaced as leader. The reverse he has suffered in the trenchantly worded decision on Inkandla by the Constitutional Court has served to strengthen the rand as speculators seek to profit from his potential political demise. There is much for the ANC to cogitate upon in this development. 9. The debacle over the non-security enhancements to Inkandla has unfortunately not ended with the judgment of the Constitutional Court. In his apology to the nation on the 1st of April 2016, the President let it be known that it was always his intention to comply with the remedial action of the Public Protector as set out in her Secure in Comfort report. According to Clause 11.1 of that report, the President must take steps with the assistance of the National Treasury and the police to determine the reasonable costs of the measures implemented by the Department of Public Works at his private residence that do not relate to security and which include the visitor centre, the amphitheatre, the cattle kraal, and the chicken run, as well as the swimming pool. 10. It is plain that it was the intention of the Public Protector that all measures that do not relate to security that were implemented and paid for by the Department of Public Works are covered. The 5 items listed are obviously set out as examples of the kind of measure that do not relate to security, and they are not an exhaustive list on any proper interpretation of the words used by the Public Protector. 11. If regard is had to the report itself as an aid to interpretation, then it is plain that many more items than the 5 examples listed are at play in the investigation, including, but not limited to, air conditioning, the sewerage upgrade, paving, and the professional fees of various kinds that arose because of what the Public Protector rightly calls scope creep in the project of the Department of Public Works at Inkandla. Indications are that these additional items and features could cost in excess of 40 million rand. 12. While the Constitutional Court has very properly and correctly described the remedial action quoted above as binding and enforceable, its orders relating to the remedial action required of the President by the Public Protector are in effect a dilution, probably to a value measured in millions of rands, of the Public Protector's requirements. 13. The error in Orders 5 and 6, which gives rise to the ambiguity described above, is best cleared up by the President himself announcing publicly that he understands Orders 5 and 6 to mean that he must pay the full reasonable costs of the 5 items listed in Order 5 and a reasonable percentage of such other measures as do not relate to security as determined by Treasury in Order 6.
14. As regards the impeachment debate in the National Assembly tomorrow, who would urge the ANC to allow its members a free and secret ballot in that debate, so as to enable them to exercise unfettered oversight over the head of the executive, as is their constitutional obligation, and also to facilitate the exacting of accountability on the part of the president. 15. We are willing to engage with you further, should you so desire. We respectfully ask that you acknowledge receipt of this letter and let us have your substantive reply, both on the possibility of recalling the president and on the enforcement of the Nkandla case, order of court, as soon as possible.
At the same time, we wrote to the public protector to record our concerns about the dilution of the thrust of the remedial action. This is what we said.
4th of April 2016. Dear Advocate Madonsela, re the possible irregular dilution of the remedial action ordered by you in your Secure and Comfort report on Nkandla,
in the wording of Orders 5 and 6
of the unanimous Constitutional Court judgment in the matter handed down on 31st March 2016. 1. We are concerned, as we explained at our meeting in Cape Town on 1st April 2016, that the wording of the court order in the Nkandla matter may be interpreted in such a way as to dilute, erroneously and irregularly so, the effect of the remedial action you require of the President in relation to measures implemented at Nkandla by the Department of Public Works at taxpayers' expense, which do not relate to security.
2. We respectfully refer you to paragraph 10 of the judgment, where the relevant part of your report is quoted with approval and without qualification by the court. We ask you to compare clauses 11.1.1 and 11.1.2 of your report with the provisions of orders 5 and 6 of the order handed down on the 31st of March 2016. 3. In its discussion of the remedial action required in all the circumstances, the court does not disclose any basis for diluting your report by unilaterally changing your wording, and which include as a reference to 5 examples of measures which do not relate to security, to namely only, which suggests in Order 5 a closed and exclusive list of measures that do not relate to security. 4. This suggestion is compounded by the use of the words "those measures" in the two orders in a manner that ambiguously seems to indicate that those measures are confined only to the 5 examples of the most egregious measures unrelated to security that you mentioned as examples in your report clause 11.1.1. 5. Your report itself makes it abundantly clear that the 5 examples you cite are but the tip of the iceberg of expenditure incurred that does not relate to security. In this regard, the various professional fees, the air conditioning supplied, the upgrade to the sewerage system at Nkandla, and the extensive paving estimated to have cost in excess of 40 million, are but a few expensive instances in which all or part of the expenditure incurred is not related to security.
6. If the President and the National Treasury are going to interpret Orders 5 and 6 of the judgment as being limited in a way not foreshadowed either in your report or in the body of the judgment itself, it is going to be necessary to approach the court to clarify and, if necessary, amend its order so that proper effect is given to the binding and enforceable nature of the remedial action you have specified.
7. We attach a letter to the Secretary General of the ANC in which we raise, inter alia, the matter of the interpretation of the court order.
8. Obviously, if the President is advised to heed our plea and lets it be known that he accepts that the court order does not irregularly
dilute your remedial action, then no harm will have been done. 9. Conversely, if the President seeks to construe narrowly the orders so as to limit his personal liability to the 5 items mentioned in Order 5, then it will be necessary for you to defend the integrity, dignity, and effectiveness of your office again.
10. It is not for us to say how you should go about doing so. There are various methods and strategies available, including negotiation, mediation, and further litigation, to clarify the position. 11. For now, please regard this letter as an official letter of complaint that the wording of Orders 5 and 6 has or may have irregularly diluted the ambit and effect of your remedial action as specified in Clauses 11.1.1 and 11.1.2 of your Secure in Comfort report. 12. We would respectfully suggest that you take the matter of our complaint up with the Treasury and, of course, with the President. If both show respect for the true ambit of your report and construe the provisions of Orders 5 and 6 in a way that does not limit the work required of Treasury to the 5 items set out in Order 5, our complaint will be satisfied.
13. If, however, either of them interprets the orders to mean that the President is somehow magically absolved from repaying a reasonable percentage of all the other measures implemented at Nkandla over and above the 5 items set out in Order 5, then it will be necessary for you, and possibly the applicants in both matters, to apply to court to correct the erroneous interpretation of the order upon which the President and or the Treasury may seek to rely. As we have pointed out to the ANC, the matter is urgent in that tight time limits have been set by the court. We went to considerable trouble to ensure that Mantashe received his letter. This was confirmed well before the impeachment debate, itself a controversial procedure with no real precedent. Some argued that an inquiry should precede the debate and that the President should be obliged to appear before a committee of Parliament to justify his actions and explain his decisions in respect of Nkandla and the adverse findings made against him, not only by the public protector, but also by the highest court in the land. In the event, the ANC used its majority in the National Assembly to defeat the impeachment motion brought by the DA. We remained concerned that Orders 5 and 6 of the Nkandla judgment required adjustment. This could be done by a court of its own volition. We made noises in the media and on television about the mistake or patent error in the judgment, all to no avail. The Constitutional Court was not going to correct of its own motion. Here is a single example of the trouble we took to draw public attention to the snafu in the judgment in the form of an article published in Business Day in April 2016.
Final judgment on Nkandla may be Waterloo for Zuma. Much muddy water has flowed under the bridge since March 2014, when the Secure in Comfort final report of the Public Protector about security enhancements at the Nkandla homestead occupied by the President and some members of his family was made public. On the 9th of February 2016, the Constitutional Court heard 2 applications for direct access to it concerning whether the failure to comply with the remedial action set out in that report constituted a breach of constitutional duties by the National Assembly and the President himself. The applications were brought by the Economic Freedom Fighters and the Democratic Alliance. Corruption Watch was given leave to be admitted as a friend of the court. The Public Protector took part in the applications in order to defend her powers and argue on their ambit. The investigation of the security enhancements by the Public Protector revealed that a cattle kraal, chicken run, swimming pool, visitor centre, and amphitheatre, among other things, were built at state expense as part of the public works project at Nkandla. Her report concluded that state funds should not have been used for non-security enhancements at the homestead, and her remedial action was that the president must, with the assistance of the police and the Minister of Finance, determine the reasonable costs of those features and repay to the state a reasonable proportion of the expenses incurred at Nkandla in the course of the project. The President and the National Assembly, in the purported exercise of its duty to hold the executive to account, took steps which they contended amount to compliance with the remedial action required by the public protector. The Minister of Police produced a report in May 2015 in which he found that no funds were payable by the President for the non-security enhancements. To get to this conclusion required some convoluted reasoning, which, to the astonishment of some, the Minister continues to defend. The EFF and DA complained that the measures taken fell short of compliance with the public protector's remedial action, and that the minister's report was irregularly obtained. The public protector and both applicants sought clarity from the court on the nature and extent of the power to take remedial action that the public protector has in terms of section 182(1)(c) of the Constitution. They submitted that her remedial actions are binding and enforceable unless set aside by a court of law and cannot be diluted, ignored, or circumvented by other organs of state, which are constitutionally obliged to ensure the protection of her dignity and effectiveness. Both the President and the Speaker initially took up the position that the decisions of the public protector are not binding on them, but in argument this contention was not persisted in by the President's counsel. The Minister of Police stoutly contended that his report was valid and lawful. He intended, so he argued, to complement rather than subvert the report of the public protector. Corruption Watch complained that the failure properly to implement the remedial action required undermined ethical standards and impaired the struggle against procurement corruption in South Africa. The declaratory order sought to the effect that the President had violated his oath of office by acting in breach of his constitutional obligations in the manner in which he had conducted himself in relation to the investigation and report by the public protector was resisted on the whimsical basis that we live in delicate times and a dangerous year. This argument attempts to wish away the powers of the courts sitting in constitutional matters. They must declare any conduct that is inconsistent with the Constitution as invalid to the extent of its inconsistency. Against this background, the actual findings of the Constitutional Court are instructive. In essence, every contention by the respondents with which the applicants did not agree was unanimously rejected by all 11 judges sitting in the matter. The judgment is a magnificent and monumental reaffirmation of the true nature of our constitutional democracy. It magisterially traverses the foundational values at play, the scope of the work of Chapter 9 institutions that support constitutional democracy, and the duties of the President, both as head of state and as the head of the national executive. While all due deference to the doctrine of the separation of powers is given, the National Assembly does not emerge unscathed. Its gyrations aimed at protecting the President against liability for the non-security upgrades are described as inconsistent with the duty of Parliament to hold the executive to account. Despite the delicate time in a dangerous year submission on behalf of the President, the declaratory order he sought to avoid was made on the basis that the court is obliged to do so according to the explicit words of the Constitution.
The possibility of a bona fide error on the part of the president, whether due to wrong legal advice or otherwise, is regarded by the court as irrelevant. A breach of a constitutional duty remains a breach, whether or not it occurs due to a bona fide error. From the point of view of the public protector, the judgment buries for all time the contentions that her remedial action power, derived from the Constitution, is anything other than binding and enforceable, unless it is framed in terms that are not intended by her to be binding and enforceable. This is not the case in respect of the Secure and Comfort Report of March 2014. In essence, the stance adopted in the Supreme Court of Appeal in the matter between the DA and the SABC is followed in terms that are far more trenchantly set out for the avoidance of any doubt as to the thrust of the judgment and its interpretation of the ambit of the power to take remedial action accorded to the public protector by the Constitution in order to protect the public. The judgment is also a strong endorsement of the rule of law and the foundational value of accountability in the constitutional order in place. It deals firmly and sternly with the conduct of the President and the National Assembly, which falls short of constitutional muster insofar as their respective responses to the report of the public protector are concerned. The Speaker of the National Assembly ought to hang her head in shame for allowing the matter to take the convoluted course which it followed in the National Assembly. Her attitude that the Constitution, our supreme law, is no more than a set of guidelines is evident. Her lack of impartiality in presiding over the Nkandla issues so as to shield the President from accountability is lamentably plain, and the odious political posturing of the majority of the National Assembly, all meekly accepting instructions from the Thule House without regard to their constitutional duties, is exposed. The President, the Minister of Police, and the National Assembly have received their comeuppance from the court. Conduct that is inconsistent with the Constitution is invalid. Their conduct in relation to the Nkandla debacle has been shown, to the satisfaction of the court, to be inconsistent with the Constitution. The relief granted by the court is wide-ranging. It is declaratory, mandatory, and supervisory in nature. Unfortunately, instead of fully implementing the remedial action required, it appears to limit the President's liability to only 5 items, whereas the Public Protector's report is far more wide-ranging. In the light of recent revelations regarding the scope of non-security work done, the relief granted may not be framed widely enough to cover the true indebtedness of the President in respect of all of the non-security enhancements at Nkandla. Covered walkways, air conditioning, Meranti doors and other items have come to light in a report by a whistleblower who ought to know during the period after the case was heard. It is to be hoped that this development and the possible error and ambiguity in the orders granted will not lead to further skirmishing and delays. The judgment is a test of the commitment of the ANC to the rule of law and the sanctity of the values of our Constitution. South Africa can ill afford a president who breaks the law at all, but especially so at a time when the economic ratings agencies are pondering a downgrade to junk status. Whether the ANC is prepared to act appropriately on these sad facts remains to be seen. Its initial reactions are an insult to the intelligence of the people of South Africa. The President's apology on 1 April was mechanical and insincere. Gwede Mantashe's press conference, in which the President did not participate, was aimed at putting spin on the outcome, while the Speaker's unrepentant attitude during her 3rd April press conference was disgracefully lamentable. The interests of the country are not served by the puny attempts at damage control that the ANC has developed to date. Hopefully, something more positive and appropriate will be forthcoming in time. When we became deafened by the silence of the ANC and the public protector, neither of whom responded substantively to the correspondence referred to above, we decided to await the input of the National Treasury and the response of the court. In due course, and with a day to spare, the National Treasury presented the Constitutional Court with a calculation of the President's indebtedness, which was clearly limited to the five items listed in Order 5. It came to 7.8 million rand, a fraction of the amount the President truly owes on any sensible interpretation of the Public Protector's report. With unseemly haste, the court accepted the Treasury report and ordered the President to personally pay the calculated amount. It was apparent that the court would not attend to the error of its own motion. We pinned our hopes on the Public Protector and wrote her the following email on 18th of May. Dear Advocate Madonsela, it emerged in debate in the National Assembly yesterday that the President appears to be interpreting Orders 5 and 6 of the Constitutional Court Nkandla matter in the manner foreshadowed in paragraph 13 of our letter to you of the 4th of April 2016. In the circumstances, we complain that your report and the remedial actions set out in it have been unlawfully diluted due to the error in the judgment, and we respectfully request that you and the applicants join in requesting the correction of the patent error in the judgment by the court as a matter of urgency. We received no response. We tried again on the 30th of June. Dear Advocate Madonsela, 1. On the 4th of April this year, Accountability Now gave you an official complaint that your report called Secure in Comfort had been illegally diluted by the narrow scope of the order granted in the Nkandla litigation by the Constitutional Court. While we appreciate that you have no power to investigate court decisions, what is at stake here is not an investigation in the usual sense, but an order of court that has resulted in prejudice to the public purse, which, as a party to the relevant litigation, you are well placed to address. No investigation is indicated, only the correction of a patent and expensive error in the order made by the Constitutional Court. 2. At the same time, we furnished you with a copy of the letter of the same date which we wrote to the Secretary General of the ANC. Paragraph 9 and following of which are relevant to the content of this letter. Both letters are on our website for public consumption, due to the wide public interest in securing a just outcome in the Nkandla litigation. 3. Clearly, the President has not chosen to construe the order in a way that protects the dignity and effectiveness of your office, as is required by Section 181(3) of the Constitution. Despite our respectful invitation in the letter to the ANC Secretary General that he does so. The taxpayer is also out of pocket for a great deal of money due to the incorrect and unduly narrow ambit of the order granted. 4. It is apparent to us and to more thoughtful members of the media that the applicants, the amicus curiae, and your legal team in the Constitutional Court have won an order that considerably dilutes the remedial action actually required by you in your report. 5. There is much speculation as to how this could have happened. This is not helpful. What would be helpful would be the launching, preferably by you, of a short and simple application under Rule 42 of the Uniform Rules of Court. The Constitutional Court has the power, both mero motu and on application by any party affected, to vary its order so as to correct the patent error in it, to the extent that the error requires variation of the order. 6. It is clear from the court's acceptance of the calculation presented to it earlier this week that it is not contemplating any mero motu variation of the order it made, probably due to the fact
that the true ambit of your report, when compared with its order, has not been properly drawn to its attention. Whatever the reason, it is plain that it is not in the interest of justice that the order containing the patent error be allowed to stand.
7. Kindly advise us of the fate of our complaint mentioned above. 8. We are particularly interested to know whether you or any affected party, notably the applicants, the EFF and the DA, are contemplating or preparing an application under Rule 42. Lest you are unable to deal with this query yourself, to the extent that it involves the other affected parties, we are copying this email to them and their counsel so that they may make their position known, both to you and to us. Ideally, all four affected parties should collaborate in seeking to vary the order and thereby correct the patent error in it.
Anything less than the necessary correction would amount to turning of a blind eye to an expensive miscarriage of justice, not as regards the merits of the judgment in question, on which the court was excellent, but as regards the quantum of the reasonable costs of non-security-related enhancements to the Nkandla homestead, which it orders the President to pay. We respectfully point out that as the author of the Secure in Comfort report, you are the person best placed to elucidate its ambit to the extent that any such elucidation may be required. As we construe your report, it is plain, ex facie the report itself, that there's been a dilution of the remedial action you required to be taken. 9. Please acknowledge receipt of this email. Yours in accountability.
The public protector did not acknowledge receipt of the letter or respond to a telephone message. It seemed that she'd gone to ground. Next, we sought to lobby the political parties. As James Self of the DA had been at school with one of our directors, Guy Lloyd Roberts, it seemed that this was a good link to exploit in the search for accountability in relation to the content of the judgment. Disappointingly, Guy drew a blank from the DA. In later correspondence, dated 11th July 2016, Self explained the DA's position in the following terms. Of course, the point is a good one. I discussed the matter with our team at the time the judgment was handed down, and again subsequently, once the matter started to gain some media traction. The Chief Justice was quite emphatic when he specified the items for which Zuma had to pay. Our team think that that was deliberate, and that he wanted finality on the matter. To reopen the matter would open up new and costly avenues of litigation and counter-litigation relating to what was included in the Public Protector's report. Frankly, at this point, we don't have the resources to pursue this. Besides, we tend to engage in litigation to establish legal principles. In this case, it was to establish the binding nature of the remedial action ordered by the Public Protector. We started this strategy by seeking a court determination on the SABC report, since the remedial action in that report was far clearer and less ambiguous. As you know, we achieved the right outcome in the Supreme Court of Appeal, and we were just turning our attention in the Western Cape High Court to the Nkandla report using the SCA ruling when the EFF applied for direct access to the Crown Court. The legal principle has now been firmly established by the Apex Court. We see little merit in pursuing the matter further. This is also the professional advice we have received from our legal team. We are at the same time carefully considering what is meant by personally pay. In our view, it is clearly the court's intention that Zuma and not his allies or friends should pay the money. You will also have noticed that we are going after him for the tax he ought to have paid. Some of these aspects may result in further litigation. After digesting this email, Accountability Now decided to communicate with the last remaining party in the matter, the EFF. The chairman of the EFF, Dali Mpofu SC, is a senior advocate of the Johannesburg Bar, and he enjoys a
collegial relationship with the lawyers of Accountability Now. After talking to him on the phone on the 12th of July, it was a pleasure for me to record the upshot in an email which read in part, "Thank you for phoning me back and for the reassurance that the matter of a Rule 42 application in respect of the snafu in the CC in Kandla judgment will receive the attention of the EFF legal team after the municipal elections on the 3rd of August. I'm very relieved to hear this, as there are millions at stake, as well as the further opportunity to hold JZ to account properly for the excesses of Inkandla. Pay back the money redux, if you like." One afterthought concerning the timing of the EFF intervention. You don't want a full and final settlement concluded before the Rule 42 application is actually launched. It will accordingly be prudent for the attorneys of record of the EFF to write to the attorneys representing government and those representing JZ, warning them of the need for correction of the patent error in Orders 5 and 6 in the judgment, so as to show greater fidelity to the report of the public protector, styled Secure in Comfort. Admonish them not to attempt any novations, full and final settlements, or other nefarious tricks. Also, please note that there's a lot of unanswered correspondence at www.accountabilitynow.org.za concerning the error in the judgment, both with the Office of the Public Protector and with the ANC. It could be used as grist to the mill in the application, especially as the error was drawn to the attention of both as early as 4th April 2016. Simply search using Inkandla in the internal search engine on the site. None of the correspondence has been replied to yet. If any replies do come in, which seems unlikely after so much time has elapsed, we will be sure to let you know.
At the time of writing, the country was in the grip of a municipal election campaign. Matter of holding the president to final account on Inkandla would have to await the calmer waters of the post-election period. At least Accountability Now could say that it played its part in exacting accountability for the malfeasance and misfeasance at Inkandla.